And with the Look at Our Trails on the phone with us from Mountain Trails Foundation, Charlie Sturgis. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Well, the trails are looking pretty darn good, but there's probably little tidbits here and there that we need to talk about. Let's see. We're going to have a pretty warm weekend. So, one, bugs are out. So, particularly if you're hiking, more so hiking than biking, we are starting to see more and more bugs. So, make sure you have some bug spray with you. And certainly if you're going up into the Uintas, you can literally be eaten alive up there. So, take bug spray. It does make a difference. And my personal favorite is long pants, long sleeves. Just spray your clothes, and you'll be okay. You know, Leslie, I'm sure that I'd be surprised if you didn't ask me about Garson's Pass. Garson's Pass is definitely in a state of disheaval at this point, disruption. It's unfortunate it's happening during the middle of the summer and during the busiest time of year, but sometimes between the construction windows that you have in the mountains and people's ability to actually schedule things, this is the time they could do it. So if you're going to be doing the ridge crest area at all, please consider a shuttle. There is essentially no parking up there. So getting dropped off and riding back to your car, wherever you might be coming from, Salt Lake or Park City side, is an ideal way to go. We do have the Bloods Lake Trail is open and going, and parking there is pretty reasonable. They're working on that lot here shortly, but that lot will be open. Half the lot will be open while they do the other half, and then they'll finish the other half. And so that'll get staggered in. So things are should be happening up there and should be coming along pretty good. People are using Bloods Lake in a big way. So, it's a great trail. You should get out and check it out. Last but not least, a little self-promotion because I do believe it's important for the trail world here. We did actually publish Prime Cuts 3, our new book. It's in the store. When we actually, Mark Fisher and myself, Paul Boyle, put this book together, it's, of course, once again, to help people have and find their way through the trail system in the Park City area and some of the surrounding stuff. So if you like, that's out there too. Leslie, I think have a great weekend. It looks like it's going to be a beauty.
Okay, I got a question for you, though. Sweeney's noticed a bunch of, from Flat Cable down there, noticed a bunch of little red, flags. What's going on there?
Little red flags.
You know, things that you would put out when you're surveying?
Yeah, pin flags.
Mm-hmm.
Say it again, right below Flat Cable?
Yep. I guess from Flat Cable, along, to Sweeney's there. And as you come down to the town lift.
Could be leftover flags from previous, but let me check with Rick. I'm not aware that we're doing anything in that area at the moment because most of our activity is up high right now.
Okay. All right, Charlie.
How about we'll table that discussion until next Friday?
Okay. Thanks.
Thanks, Leslie.
Charlie Sturgis with Mountain Trails Foundation. 8:13 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher with the Park City Chamber Bureau's marketing team presented next winter's marketing and communications plan at their annual meeting this week. In the studio with a rundown of what that looks like, I have Communications Director Jim Powell. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Well, let's just take in a look at the season just passed. I guess other than snow, is the marketing team taking any credit for the great winter, record-breaking winter we had?
I can't take credit for the snow and all the visitors, but I think, we look at our marketing efforts in a long-term basis. And, really our role is to build the awareness, opinion, consideration of Park City as a destination. And again, we felt like we did a pretty good job this past year. We do a lot of testing on our marketing efforts. And, again, we saw a really positive response to our new campaign, the Winter's Favorite Town campaign. So,
well, I was going to ask about that. We came from the Yes, All That campaign to Winter's Favorite Town. Mm-hmm. Catchy yes, but who says who?
So again, when we first started the whole development of that campaign, we pre-tested it in New York and L.A., and again, that's how we landed on it to begin with. We then ran the campaign this past year, and then we do post-marketing testing. We do about 1,500 surveys of people that were served that advertising, and again, it scored extremely well for us, not only in awareness, but also in its ability to drive interest in the destination, people visiting the website, requesting additional information, So again, we're really, really excited about that. We'll continue that for the next couple of years.
Okay. So as that, I mean, I didn't notice a little trademark or registered on it. So you can't take that?
No, we've registered that. We own that one. So again, we really like that. I think we've got some long-term legs with it.
Yeah. Well, again, says who though? I mean, just because we say so, we get it?
Sure. Yeah. Why not?
That's America. So let's talk a little bit about what you have in store for next winter. Let's talk a little bit about the international effort. Where do we focus that?
You know, there's some primary markets that we go after. A lot of people don't know it, but, you know, our number one international market is Australia, then Mexico, Brazil, and the UK. You know, for many years, we have focused on working with travel trade, tour operators, travel agents, and helping educate them about the destination of Park City. But more and more now, we're starting to direct consumer in those markets. We're starting to see them change over and start to book directly. So again, our efforts are kind of limited in that area, but we're walking before we run, I think. And, you know, so in those four markets, we're specifically starting to run advertising there. But we also mentioned the other day that, you know, we're also using influencers to help us.
Yeah. Before we get to that notion of influencers, though, I mean, I work in a restaurant during the winter months and didn't notice the Brazilian, Australian, mm-hmm. or UK folks there. Mm-hmm. Lots of Mexicans, though. I mean, why is that? Just because that we see more just because they're so close?
Well, I think there's a combination of things that go on. Based on the data that we saw this year, we saw a little softness in our international market this year. Mexico is a great story. We have two daily direct flights, one from Mexico City, one from Guadalajara. It's 3.5 hours to get here from there, and it's direct into Salt Lake City. There is no better way to do that. Now, one of the hitches this year was their holiday, Semana Santa, which is Easter. We lost that this year because Easter falling so far out of the ski season. I think it was on the 21st this year. So again, we lost a bit of that market from Brazil and Mexico. So, but in general, we saw a bit of softening with international, and that might just be due to the strength of the dollar. They may be going other places, you know, some geopolitical issues that might be out there. But again, we take a long-term look with international market. We don't take our foot on and off the gas pedal there, depending on what's going on. We really try to keep that moving forward. So,
and I think of all of those, Australia is the only one with an epic resort.
Yeah, there are some others. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, you've got internationally Japan as well. So again, I think, you know, we don't see a large contingent from Japan. But again, Australia, you do see that crossover there. Australians also love Park City. You know, and we were talking about the international welcome videos, which we shot in that effort to develop more content around international. Instead of having some spokesperson from, you know, Australia or Mexico develop a spot or a video for us, we actually found locals here in Park City that's their home country. And they're speaking to their fellow countrymen about what a great destination Park City is. And you know, we really enjoyed doing that. It's super authentic. We worked with our local members, which was really great, had them speak on our behalf. So, you know, we think that's very genuine. And we're just starting to use those. And those will be on our website. We'll use those in presentations where we're in market. We'll find opportunities to put those out in social media in those countries. So, you know, again, we just feel that it's more authentic to have somebody here from Park City talk about Park City. So
yeah, you told me you were out late last night doing some video shooting. Was that what you were doing?
No, this was... So we have a brand new summer campaign for next year called On the Right Trail. Trail being more of a metaphor than, you know, just talking about our trails. There are lots of trails around Park City, arts and cultural trails, food and beverage trails. And so we have been shooting next summer's commercials for the last couple of weeks. And we spent a full day out yesterday. We were up on Guardsman in the morning. We were over at Deer Valley midday. And then last night we were out in Camas at High Star Ranch for the concert out there. And so again, just gathering great assets and image for the campaign for next year. Beautiful day yesterday. So again, it's going to be, you know, amazing looking for us. So
yeah. And as you mentioned, you're trying something new using influencers. Talk just a little bit about what you mean by that.
So I think, you know, we've tried to use it very strategically. We're approached daily by people that call themselves influencers. And really, we try to be a little bit more strategic in how we approach those individuals and who we select to speak for us or get to partner with. You know, and again, if the strategy dictates that we do it, we then work either with our agency or others to help vet who that individual is. We make sure that they have a great following. And again, we try to do our research on and make sure they're the right mix to our audience. You know, and then we'll bring them in, we'll host them here, they'll spend 4 or 5 days. Typically, they generate blog posts, video content, and then again, they push that out to their followers. And especially in international places like Brazil and Mexico, influencers carry a lot of weight. And so, again, that's one of the areas we've started to move into. More domestically with influencers, we try to only use that for some specific things here or there. You know, we'll use it for fall marketing. You know, again, we don't really need a lot of help with winter marketing from an influencer. I think we've got that covered. But talking about Park City in the fall or in the spring, you know, that might be an opportunity for us to partner with somebody who has a good audience.
Is it an age thing? I mean, are you looking for a younger audience?
Sure.
Or, yeah?
Sure. I mean, that's part of the strategy. You look at how we reach the various segments that we go after, and certainly that's a younger segment. So,
yeah, because I couldn't name one influencer.
That's okay.
Do we have one locally that I should know about?
Yeah, I think there's a number of people like that. We actually work with a young lady here locally, Locke Hughes. She does a lot of writing for us. And again, a lot of it's done in first person for the chamber, but she also has a great following on her website and her blog. But again, they're everywhere. And I think, you know, there's some gems out there that we try to partner with that are on par with our brand. So,
okay. And I think I heard you say on Tuesday that you had brought in this past winter some 300 journalists.
So overall 300, we probably hosted 100 in town. And then we actually met with another 200 in market. So Dan Howard and Rachel Bueller, who are my communications team, incredible team of people that go out there. They're on the road all the time. But yeah, we hosted probably about 100 domestics in North America, both Canada and the United States this past year. And then we're out on the road. In fact, Dan and his team will be headed to New York soon here. And again, that's, you know, probably at the end of the day, we'll have probably talked to 300 journalists over the course of the year. So.
Yeah. And what do they do for you?
Oh, well, again, no different. Again, we're getting articles written every day, you know, whether they're e-articles or traditional print articles or television coverage, you know, and again, really that generates a lot of what we call earned media, which is great media because, you know, again, it doesn't feel commercialized. But, you know, I think we generated probably over $30 million in earned media value this past year for the destination.
Okay. Last year, we talked about that you were going to cut the cord on all TV advertising and go 100% digital. Are you reining that in now and doing?
No, I think, you know, I think we've been testing for the last couple of years with summer, and that's where we first went all digital with our summer and fall campaigns. And winter, we had been continuing to use network television through NBC in about four or five markets. This year, kind of the big thing for us going into next winter is we are taking another step towards that. And so we shifted out of the 12 markets that we'll be in, 10 of those markets are going to be all digital. We're utilizing digital television as well as digital marketing and print in those markets. The only traditional television that we're gonna have is gonna be in LA and Chicago. Again, a lot of thought went around why we selected those markets and working with our partner NBC on the opportunities they can provide to us. But we're really excited about the digital from a standpoint of our ability to better target our guest and, you know, be able to make our buys more efficient and more economic.
Yeah. So this digital, I mean, it's like Hulu. I mean, who else are we talking about?
So we're working through a company called Viant. And again, they buy and our advertising will be spread across numerous streaming channels. So it's not like we're buying just Hulu or, you know, Apple TV or things like that. Again, we're buying through kind of somebody who helps us spread that around that streaming TV universe. So, and really the cool thing with Viant is we're able to use their data. They've got first-person data, plus they use third-person data that really help us target that skiing household. Again, we don't want to waste impressions on people that aren't skiers or passionate or even interested in coming here. So again, we're hoping that this allows us to target our consumer a little bit more. And we've got some research in place that will allow us to compare what we've done last year to this year and show if we're actually moving that needle.
Okay. Also, a little bit about group sales. This is a way the Chamber's got a program that you bring in people, mm-hmm. you show them around. Mm-hmm. If they book, you pay what?
So I think first and foremost, it's important to remember what a huge part that our group sales team is of the Chamber Bureau and what we do for the community here. Group sales are so important to Park City because it really does fill in that shoulder season and kind of additional season as part of summer as well. And so, yeah, we do, you know, the group generates about 700 leads annually to the community. Out of those 700, maybe about 200 get converted, which is about $13 million in revenue. But one of the hooks that we have with that program is that as we're meeting and talking to meeting planners, You know, if they come and decide to actually book their group here, we'll actually reimburse their airfare for their pre-trip out here as they come out and do their pre-con to determine if they're going to come to Park City. Tanya Sweeten and her team generate all these amazing leads for our community. As you heard in that video, I think Dirk Beal was talking about it, but, you know, we're almost really an extension of the sales force of all that group sales that exists here in town. And it really does fill in those, in those shoulder season periods. So
that's more of a thank you than do you think of a people, I don't know. I mean, they're going to come look anyway, right? So
yeah, and I think, you know, again, one of our best hooks is the ease of access, and that, you know, reimbursing airfare kind of continues to make that a great way to highlight that asset. So, and again, if you're a group planner, that's something you're looking for to get your group in and out easy. So,
okay. We didn't have much of a spring skiing season this year, just given that the resorts closed them so early in April. Mm-hmm. Is that the plan for next year as well?
Or? I haven't seen anything official, but I think we'll probably go through the 12th, and the 12th is actually Easter this year, which is a nice combination. We should see some good business during that time period. We still continue to have a dedicated marketing campaign for spring. It's our Spring It On campaign. And we really put a lot of effort into driving business in March and April. And with those additional days in April, I think that'll be good for us. I think we'll see strong numbers, right through mid to late March, and then right through that last week of the season. So.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
No. I mean, just excited for another great summer here. It was a beautiful day as we were out shooting yesterday, and looking forward to launching that campaign next year. And, you know, we're just off to the races here. So.
All right. Jim Powell is the communications director marketing director for Park City Chamber Bureau. Thanks. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, the Park City Council considered donating money to the Children's Justice Center, also voting on a resolution expressing the council's official position on the State Route 248 environmental assessment at their meeting last night. Joining us with a recap, I have Park City Mayor Andy Bierman. Good morning.
Hi, Leslie. What a beautiful morning.
Mm. So let's see. Staff had proposed to council to consider donating $75,000 to the Children's Justice Center. After some moving public comments, council agreed to donate $100,000. So we've got that money in the budget.
Yeah, it's a great cause. It's one that we struggled a little bit with figuring out how to fund. We typically use special service contracts to help out our nonprofits, and our special service contracts, we aren't allowed to put those towards capital projects. So that held us up on this. We've been looking around for funding, and on the last day of our budget cycle in June, the city manager knew we were trying to find a way to fund this, and she approached me and she said she thought we had found a way, which we had some money remaining in our contingency, which is sort of unrestricted funds at the end of the year, and she asked if council would be interested in looking at that, and I said, let's bring it to a meeting. And so this is going to come out of contingency funds that roll over from 2019. Generally, they just go towards the next year's fund balance. And we're actually going to have to open up the budget to do this, reopen it, do a public hearing, but we think there's great support in the community, and we're happy we were able to figure out how to do it.
And it's certainly within the council's purview to support different causes when they see fit. Like you said at the meeting last night, you have done these kind of one-off donations before, but there are a lot of nonprofits in town doing a lot of good work, yeah. And many of them turned down for that special service contracts process. So how does the council decide who gets what?
It's really tricky. It's kind of a matter of how we can leverage our money. Sometimes there are opportunities because there are a lot of different parties all throwing in. We can move the needle. Sometimes it's a matter of value and urgency. We also look at whether organizations, how time sensitive it is, what other funding sources are available to them. But really, it seems like every year some critical opportunity comes up where we can step in and help, and we do when we can. And there are dozens of nonprofits we help on a regular basis throughout the year. I think we're as fair as we possibly can be on that.
Any idea if this takes them to where they need to be, the Children's Justice Center?
I think they still have a little bit more fundraising to go. I believe they're maybe $200,000 off or so. I'm really hoping it's a great cause. I'm really hoping the community will step up, and if needed, Summit County will step up some more.
Yeah, one of those things we wish that we didn't have to have, but yeah.
Oh, it's just horrible. I mean, you hear the stories, and it's just unbelievable. Considering we live in a town where I don't even lock my doors, you'd like to think we're in a paradise, but this violence against children is just something no one ever wants to hear about or think about. And that's one of the things I told this group. I mean, this has been a really arduous fundraising campaign for them. But if nothing else, I think it's created a higher level of awareness in the community as to some of the things that we need to take seriously and we need to address.
The council voted on the joint resolution with the Summit County Council conveying to UDOT our stance on the State Route 248 preferred alternative. The language pretty soft. I mean, what do you want residents to understand about this project?
Thanks for asking that question, because I want to back this up a little bit and specify that we did go to UDOT and ask for help on this road. We really wanted to have a functional park and ride and some dedicated bus lanes and deal with some of the pinch points and intersections. So we went to UDOT and we went through their process. The results they came back with weren't what we had desired, but the results, frankly, that probably 90% of the cities and towns in Utah would have been thrilled with. That's usually how we solve problems in Utah, is to widen roads and do these kind of improvements. So we've gone through this process. They've heard solidly from the public. They've now heard from our council, and we've begun conversations with them. Is there an incremental approach to this? Are there small things we can do that facilitate buses in our park and rides that we can start out with that don't require these big road improvements, which we neither have the funding nor the community desire to do? And we think that we've preserved the integrity of the process by not pulling the plug or really turning on it. Like, we asked the public to have some patience. We preserved these studies so we can use those. And we're optimistic that UDOT's going to be a great partner, as they've been in the past, and work with us. And we'll end up with a result much more along the lines of what we originally intended.
Yeah, will we at least, though, widen the road to two lanes in both directions? You know, because that's kind of the choke point as we get before the schools, and then it opens back up again. I mean, is there some plan to at least widen that?
I don't want to speculate on what plans will or won't move forward, because we just rebooted these conversations with UDOT to see what an incremental approach would look like. We've got about $10 million we can work with on this road, and I think there's probably immediate improvements that could be done to the medians to allow for some bus running along the sides. There may be areas where strategic widening would make sense. I would say with the small budget we have, there's not a lot we could do immediately. And then I think there's some intersections that we need to look at. And if we want to run buses, certainly we need to consider some queue jumping lights at the pinch points, so the bus doesn't get stuck behind a merge. They're actually able to go in front of traffic. So those are the things I think we'll be talking about. But really, at this point, it's time to sit down with them, take all the feedback we've received, and look at positive steps moving forward. But I personally believe we're in a great place with this. I apologize for the stress it caused the public. I know a lot of people were really concerned, but I think it's healthy to have these conversations. If nothing else, I've never had so many residents come to me and say, why don't we focus more on buses and transit? I think people are starting to understand you can't have it always. We either need to embrace transit or we need to embrace bigger roads. And what I continue to hear from the community is they want transit and active transportation to be the priorities.
Okay, and I want to get back to that when we talk a little bit more about the surveys. But this I got to ask, because it's scratching my head. Maybe it's a question for Alfred Knotts. But I mean, the plan showed two turn lanes from 248 onto Bonanza Drive. Are we talking about widening Bonanza Drive? There's no way you could get two lanes of traffic into a one-lane road.
I would defer to Alfred on that. I think that may have to do with our plans for the transit center under the Arts and Culture District, because that would bring the buses directly into the transit center. But I would say ask Alfred that question next time he comes back on.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the amendment to the summer onboard transit survey. Council member Steve Joyce wanted to know when we're going to start seeing a list of changes that we can point to based on these surveys. Mm-hmm. When does that happen?
I think it's already happening. I mean, Councilmember Tim Henney and myself are a part of JTAB, which is the joint board with the county and our transportation experts in town, that we've been using the survey for several months and making adjustments to our plans going forward. We haven't really updated the council on that, so I think a little more was happening than Steve had heard about, and so I think he felt better when we discussed that. But these surveys, if you haven't looked at them yet, really, it's good data that shows who's using the transportation system and why. And now we want to do a summer cycle of that. But that's going to guide our decisions.
Yeah. And as we noted, it is a onboard transit survey. So what we don't know is about those who are not riding transit. I mean, aren't those the people that we're trying to find out about to get them on a bus?
There were actually two surveys. There was an onboard survey, and then there was a survey which we sent out to neighborhood HOAs. And so we got data from both aspects, and the data is actually quite different. As you would expect, those riding the bus have very different opinions on the survey than folks who are asking, do you ride the bus? And if not, why?
Yeah. So when you talk about people say that they want to explore this more transit, I mean, do we know that people are really, I mean, because I think what you heard last night, it's like, well, we want other people to ride transit. I don't need to ride transit.
Yeah, that's always the case. Everybody loves the bus if somebody else is riding it. But I'm seeing a difference in our residents. They're starting to appreciate, particularly during events where the buses are really ramped up and parking and congestion are a real hassle. Residents are seeing the ease of the bus. I had to go speak at the Canyons yesterday, and I, you know, door to door, bus to and gondola to the Grand Summit. It was less than 15 minutes. I didn't have to hassle with any parking. It was quicker than I could have possibly done it by taking the Electric Express. And what we're hearing is residents want more convenient stops. They want higher frequency. They want an app that is more dynamic and responsive so they can see where the buses are. And we're going to tackle those areas. And I think as we make it more convenient, we will see more and more ridership, which we saw a big jump this past year.
You mentioned the JTAB. That's the, Joint Transportation Advisory Board?
Yeah.
So what's the latest there in terms of giving Summit County more say in how the transit system works?
You know, it's something we're working on. Certainly, they have stepped up their financial commitment. Their level of interest has risen dramatically in the last couple of years. For a long time, I think they just wanted broad oversight, and now they want to really get into the weeds with us. We're very receptive to that, and we're just working on mechanisms. Right now, JTAB, I think, is a great stopgap in that we're all on equal footing there, and they get a lot of input. They get the information at the same time that we do. In terms of the Park City electeds. And we're talking about potential different funding and governance models going forward. And that's something that is a big deal, so that's going to take a little bit of time to sort out. But I think we're all on relatively the same page on that moving forward, it needs to be a regional system.
Okay. The city on Monday hosted an open house for the 100 Marsac Avenue Affordable Housing Project. This is located just south of Ontario Avenue and across the street, I believe, from Hillside Avenue, kind of?
Yeah, roughly.
And in the very beginning stages of its design, a comment that a few people expressed Monday, though, was that the city has already decided to build the project regardless of what the neighbors think, and that taking public input, just kind of running through the motions. Is this a done deal?
No, that's not even remotely true. And that's something people always say when they're concerned about projects, is it's a done deal. And I just I wish people had a little more faith in the process and our transparency. Council said a year ago that we wanted to look at all of our parcels of land for potential to build affordable housing on those and vet out the ones that are good and look at those for future projects and remove the other ones or deprioritize them. And this is just part of that process. And it actually went to the public even before it went to council, our study on this. I have not seen it myself yet. I don't think 100 Marsac is a priority at this point. We have some much bigger projects. I will say the several Habitat homes we put at the along Ontario there was a lot of brouhaha over those, and those have ended up being wonderful success stories. We've got two young families with kids living in them, and I think they fit right in the neighborhood. So there may be opportunities in the future, but we'll approach it. I think it's a low priority, and if we approach it, we'll approach it like every other neighborhood and look at what's compatible with the surrounding homes.
Well, it does seem like a difficult site to build on. It is steep. It does need some soil cleanup. It's an old mill site.
Yeah.
And I guess, is it worth it to build? I mean, that could be a very expensive project.
Well, that's what the study was about. And like I said, I think this is a low priority. It may have some future potential for a future council, but right now our focus really is on Woodside 2 and Homestake and the Arts and Culture District. That's where I think we can get our most efficient housing built, and those are the projects we're closer to ready. But we always have to be looking 5, 10, 15 years into the future and see what the next council might want to be working on.
Yeah. With regard to Woodside Park Phase 2, where do things stand? I know that was going to be heard by...
Yeah, so we've gone back to a redesign. I think we're going to miss the construction season, so that's going to push that back till next spring.
Okay.
We weren't going to get real far ahead this year, but we were disappointed that we had to delay that.
So was that based on the Board of Adjustment?
Yeah, the Board of Adjustments, there were some proposed setbacks, and the Board of Adjustments didn't feel like there was enough justification for those. And so they asked us to redesign it. And, you know, the city follows its own process, so we are redesigning it.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention?
Just two honorable mentions this week. I went to the Chamber luncheon where Bob Wheaton received the Spirit of Hospitality Award, and certainly Bob's received a lot of accolades in the last year, but he deserves them all. I already miss seeing him up at Deer Valley, and I think he gave back a ton to the community. And then the other one is for Nan Worrell, my colleague on council. She received an award, or we just heard an announcement, she's going to receive an award next month from the Utah Developmental Disabilities Advocates. And they're acknowledging the work she's done, particularly internally at Park City, bringing in individuals with neurodiverse individuals to create jobs, very much along the lines of Lucky Ones. And it's an exciting pilot project at the city, and she headed that up, and she's getting statewide acknowledgement for it.
Great. Okay. Thanks, Andy.
Okay. Thanks, Leslie.
That's Park City Mayor Andy Bierman. It's the Local News Hour here on KPCW. KPCW News Time now, 8:45. Good morning. Well, the Kimball Arts Center has big plans for its 50th anniversary celebration of the Kimball Arts Festival, including free entrance this year for all full-time Summit County residents. In the studio with details, I have Communications Director Amy Roberts. Good morning.
Hi, Leslie. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. So in years past, the festival has been free for locals and second homeowners on the Friday nights. This mm-hmm. year, it's free for all Summit County residents?
Yes.
All 3 days?
All 3 days. We wanted to really acknowledge our 50th anniversary and celebrate and thank our local community. As we looked at multiple ways to do this, we did decide to free the fest thanks to a number of sponsors, including our title sponsor, Intermountain Park City Hospital, Deer Valley Resort, Promontory Club, Zions Bank and Strong Auto Group, also all chipped in to help us free the fest for locals. But given that, we did have to eliminate the second homeowners on Friday nights, because you have to show an ID in order to get the wristband to register for your free ticket. And second homeowners obviously aren't going to have that local ID.
Right. So you're not giving up money then to do this, because the sponsors are basically...
The sponsors were able to help us cover the costs, yes. And there are a number of exciting things that we're doing for our 50th celebration that we wanted to bring to the community this year.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Before we talk about that, sure. Let's just talk about the registration process.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I guess first just dealing with the second homeowners, mm-hmm. they will be paying full price this year, and you guys are ready to deal
right.
with that on the Friday night when they show
yeah.
up.
Yeah. So we looked into this. We're trying to definitely get the word out. We understand that some people out of habit will come to the gates with their utility bill. So locals need to register in advance, and you'll have to pick up your wristband at Kimball Arts Center on Kearns Boulevard. All of the information is on our website, parkcitykimballartsfestival.org. So you go on there, you register, you bring your ID, you get your wristband at Kimball Arts Center in advance. For the second homeowners that do show up, we like I said, we went through this process. Our goal is to free the fest for everyone. We need a little more sponsorship money to do that next year. We're hoping to. But in the meantime, this year, what we looked at is most of the second homeowners who did take advantage of that Friday night, over 80% of them actually came back throughout the weekend and paid to get in. So we really looked at that and thought, asking for $12 on Saturday versus on Friday night probably isn't going to break a lot of people. Our intent is not to exclude anyone. We recognize that the second homeowners are a vital part of our community and certainly participate in the nonprofit organizations here just as much as our local community. We really just listen to the cries of the local community and how to balance it with our budget and our fundraising initiatives.
Yeah. So, I mean, what the Kimball, though, gets, you get email addresses and mailing addresses. I mean, so you do get some of that you can use as marketing purposes in the future. Basically,
you mean when they register?
Yeah. Yeah.
It just like anything else, when you buy something online, you put in your mailing address and your email address. That's not something that we intend to use for any kind of nefarious purpose. It will be like, next year's festival news.
Okay. So if somebody did register and then shows up at the gate on Friday night without having gone to the Kimball, what are you going to tell them?
If it's a local who did register, we're trying to get the word out, because we don't want you to have to wait in line. We will probably be able to help you. We understand that that's going to happen. It's not recommended though, because there will be a line, and it's a little bit of a process, and I understand that people waiting in line creates some frustration. So please come to Kimball Art Center and pick up your wristband. Just follow the instructions; they're very easy.
Okay, and then they can do that even on Saturday of the festival.
Yeah, actually, if you have to register before 4 p.m. on Friday, you have to register online. But you can pick up your wristband anytime the Kimball Art Center is open during our regular business hours, which includes the weekends. You can come to Kimball Art Center on Sunday, August 4th at 10 a.m. and pick up your wristband if you'd like. Actually, on Sunday we open at noon, so not quite at 10 a.m., but yeah.
So there will be somebody there.
There will be somebody at the front desk, yep.
Okay. Well, let's talk about, again, now that we got that straightened out, don't forget your ID. Once you've got some other things happening, other special events, let's talk a little bit about the showcasing the 50 years inside the Rockwell Room.
Yeah, so up at the Rockwell Room, we're so grateful to Scott Thompson over at the Rockwell Room. He has graciously provided the space of the area for two different activities. The first is the 50 years we're calling it Festival Throughout the Ages. It's 50 years of the festival. So as I mentioned, this is our golden anniversary. Some of the photos we found through the Park City Museum and different historical sites are hysterical. They are people in their bell bottoms hanging out a broken window with broken glass with their popsicle art stick, you know, kind of selling that. So it's really fun. It's rewarding to see how the festival has truly evolved and gone from this sort of like almost pop-up type spontaneous arts festival to really a legitimate award-winning nationally recognized arts festival.
So when's that going to be open? Is it now or?
It will be open, no, during the festival, during festival hours.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that's free. Come in, please check it out. And also our title sponsor, Park City Hospital, will have their own exhibition in that same area, Healthcare Throughout the Ages. So that will be fun. And they're focused a little bit more on their 10-year anniversary coming up. And then in that same space at the Rockwell Room on Sunday, we have a brunch where it's called Brushes and Brunch, and ticket holders can mingle with last year's Best of Show artists and have a delicious brunch, which is catered by Allura Catering and Events. So we're excited about that. Tickets are on sale on our website for that event too.
And what are those going for?
They're $75. It is a fundraiser. Again, it's a brunch, and you get to mingle with the artists and from last year that won for their category, and mimosas, Bloody Marys, and all sorts of wonderful tasty treats from Allura.
All right. And you're also offering for the first time ever VIP passes. What are those?
Yeah. So I'm not sure if it's the first time ever, but it's definitely new this year and the first time in a long time. And VIP, our Kimball Terrace is hosting our VIP space. They're also hosting our gala on August 1st, which I'd like to talk about too. But during the festival, the VIP lounge is at the Kimball Terrace, which is the Kimball Art Center's old home for many of you who remember. And it's $150. It's festival admission, good for all 3 days. There's a bar. We've got Vita Tequila serving up drinks. Ogden's Own, Park City Brewery has come through. So we'll have complimentary beverages and complimentary food, both by Culinary Crafts, which is the caterer at Kimball Terrace, the chefs at the hospital, as well as Tequila Mexican Grill and Cantina. So it's really exciting. There's going to be all sorts of wonderful things going on there too, and we'll have an exhibition similar to the one at the Rockwell Room for in the VIP area, and it's, you know, you get a skybox view of all the action right over Main Street. It's a beautiful space. And then if you buy some art, of course, as if you can store it there while you're out shopping, all that good stuff.
Okay. And again, you mentioned the gala happening Thursday before the festival. Tickets still available?
We have just about 30 tickets left. So going very fast. The gala is also at the Kimball Terrace on Thursday night, beginning at 6. Some of our live auction items, you cannot win these. They don't exist. They're not available for purchase, but we've got a VIP behind the scenes experience with the New York Rangers where you're going to hang out with head coach David Quinn and go to a game and tour the locker room and meet the players. We've got a wonderful trip to South America donated by Landed, which is a boutique travel company here in Utah, and it's some of the poshest resorts in Argentina and Uruguay with concierge service provided by Landed. We've got the tickets to the Wasatch Speaker Series, which I know you and I are both members, and that's sold out. Those tickets come with a meet and greet to the speaker of your choice, along with restaurant gift certificates for each night. All sorts of really cool things. Blue Sky has donated an amazing package with fly fishing, and you can custom fly rods, and you get to stay out at the new Auberge Resort out there. The hospital has donated an executive health exam along with a bike fit and some personal one-on-one time with Max Testa and a new road bike as well to go with it. So there are some really, really cool one-of-a-kind auction items.
Okay. Again, people can purchase gala tickets, the VIP passes, tickets to the brunch, all online?
Yep. Everything is we've got two websites, KimballArtsCenter.org, and then also ParkCityKimballArtsFestival.org. Either one, you can get your way, find your way around and make sure you get your tickets to all these cool events.
Okay. Did we hit it all?
I do want to mention we still have some volunteer slots. So please, if you are looking for something fun to do that weekend, which is August 2nd through the 4th, we really do need some volunteers. So please sign up, which is also available on the website.
Okay. Amy Roberts, thank you.